The Ball Year Round podcast is brought to you by Essential Coaching, allies in holistic coaching and educational program development. Essential Coaching aims to produce exponential generational change by creating the deepest connected coaching community in the world. Your pain points are real, coach, and Essential Coaching wants to help you feel more fulfilled and happier in your career. Join coaches and educators spanning three different continents for real, relevant, and necessary professional development. If you'd like more information about Essential Coaching, visit their website at www.essential-coaching.net. Again, that is www.essential-coaching.net. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Ball Year Round Podcast. Today, Andy and I are joined by former pro hooper Tyler Amaya. Tyler was the MVP of the Class 3A state tournament his senior year, leading Mount Vernon to an undefeated record and a state title. He went on to play college ball at Gonzaga and Western Washington University. And after college, he went on a little global tour playing professionally on almost every continent. And today he runs Tyler Amaya Training and PNW Reigns AAU. So we're looking forward to learning more about his story and what he's got going on. So Tyler, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Where's the round of applause? No, thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need that cheer track if they have one. Right. Yeah, you've had a pretty nice basketball life, over the decades here of, transitioning from pro career and stuff and even getting the opportunity to explore. But what first kind of got you into the game? Were you a late bloomer or was it, you were born with a basketball in your hands kind of situation?
Man, definitely a late bloomer. When I was a kid, I was always attracted to fitness and movement as a kid. But I was like WWF when I was a kid, I was – Bret the Hitman Hart and the Undertaker, I was dressing up trying to be those guys for a while, and then it was Deion Sanders. Then I wanted to be Deion Sanders for a long time, and so I was high stepping in the end zone out in the backyard for a while, and then I just kept growing, and so I didn't even start playing organized basketball. I played like YMCA ball fourth, fifth grade, which in my area is just not competitive at all. Just I think they even had lowered hoops, like 8-foot hoops. And then sixth grade is when I finally started playing AAU, organized ball. And I had some really, really talented friends. And so for me, it was kind of just getting thrown in the fire. Like I didn't even really understand basketball. And I'd never worked on my ball handling. I had no handle, no shot, but I was just kind of a long, lanky dude that, I used to spend a lot of time running and jumping and climbing trees and, I already had some athleticism. So, I was kind of like a wild horse when I first picked up a ball. But luckily for me, I had some super talented teammates, that I kind of grew up playing with. And so they motivated me, inspired me. And then I had an incredible AAU coach. Like we were really, we're really blessed with the AAU coach we had. To give you a little background from where I'm from, Mount Vernon, Washington, we're up in the corner, northwest corner in Washington State. Incredible basketball tradition. So I graduated 2001. You go back 10 years before that, 1990, 91, 92, Mount Vernon High School made three state championship games. They won two in a row, 91, 92. They were led by a guy named Mark Hendrickson, who played 4 years in NBA, and then he played another 10 years Major League Baseball. So kind of had some of those guys to look up to. Their AAU coach, Fred Lee, he kind of took them through middle school and then kind of prepared them for high school. And then my high school coach, Mac Frazier, did the rest, took them to the state championship 2 years in a row. So fast forward 10 years, Fred Lee his son Johnny is my same age, took us through AAU 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And we had a lot of success. We were 87 and 13 in 3 years. And, you know, when you think about like AAU, a lot of times it's, you know, you get your feeder programs that are going to feed right into your high school, or you get your club teams. And this is kind of back when there's, I feel like there's a lot more feeder programs than there was club teams. And so, you know, whatever AAU team you played for, that was going right to your high school. I don't really feel like it's that way anymore. Hence why I got my own AAU club and I'm not doing feeder, but that was really instrumental in kind of preparing us for high school. And, you know, we'd be going down to Seattle playing, you know, clubs that are drawn from all of Seattle, and we're just little Mount Vernon. We're going down and beating those teams, smacking those squads. And so I think doing that at a young age really kind of prepared us for bigger moments. We weren't really, you know, it's definitely a difference. You know, I'm about an hour north of Seattle, and the game is a lot different up here than it is in Seattle. You know, you go to Seattle, it's way more athletic. It's way more intense. It's just a different game. It's a little bit slower pace when you get outside the city. And I still don't know if hoopers and outside the area really, you know, there's not too many hoopers that really grind at it. You know, the way that some of the Seattle ballers do. So, you know, our group was a little bit different in that respect, is that we were grinding, we were always working on our game, we're always playing, and we had some talent to back it up. And so we, you know, getting that taste of playing that high level when we were younger, we were never scared of the moment. We were never scared of anybody we stepped on the court with. And that, that definitely served us well going into high school.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned you kind of were a bit of a Bambi when you first got out there, in terms of didn't quite have the handle and the skill set when you first started. And, you know, you ended up being 6'6". I know, you know, I've been across some 6'6 guys that still couldn't dribble 5 years later. So what were the kind of drills that you did to kind of, you know, develop that skill? Because I've seen some highlights. You dribble like a guard. You move like a guard. So,
man, well, believe it or not, my dad's 5'8". And so when I was younger, I used to ask the universe, no, I want to be 6'6". I should have asked for 6'9", but I asked for 6'6". And, you know, the universe delivered. You know, the universe works in mysterious ways. So I'd say put that in the universe first. But, man, to be honest, my game is really it's developed in different ways. Like when I was in middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you know, I was like a cog in the system. Like I had my teammate named Troy DeVries, he's the greatest shooter I've ever played with. And he ended up playing, y'all should have him on your podcast. He's another incredible story, man. He played ACB Spain, top 5 leading scorer for about 5 years in a row, but just unbelievable shooter. So you imagine, you know, when you're in 6th grade, you got a kid like that on the team. I don't really have to score much. So, you know, my role is really rebounding, running the floor, defense, you know, and I just didn't really understand how to work at my game when I was younger. Love my folks. They never played basketball. They weren't showing me how to do dribbling moves or how to shoot. So I, unfortunately, you know, love my guy, Sean Kemp. He's like my idol, my favorite player ever, but I was trying to shoot like him when I was younger. And so I'd go out there thinking I'm cool, elbows out, you know, just practicing the worst way to shoot for years. And you know, my coach at the time, he was super fundamental driven and super team driven. And so everything that we did was kind of to fit in the team, run the system, you know, buy into your role. My role wasn't to handle the ball or to shoot. And I actually remember him putting me at point guard. I think it was 8th grade by now. And he put me at point guard. We're up like 40 or 50. And it was almost like a joke to put me at point guard. And like, I remember like bringing the ball up the court and I'm just like, I'm having a real tough time looking up and seeing the ball and calling the play. Like it was rough for me. But again, I didn't work on my handle. You know, I didn't necessarily go outside and work on different dribbles and different moves, but, the outlet that I did have, you know, this is back in my day when we used to go play at the park. You know, I don't know if y'all used to do that growing up, but, you know, I feel like in the 90s, You know, we're growing up in the middle, in middle school, about to hit high school, you know, and watching Above the Rim and watching Sunset Park and flicks like that. Like, I grew up on that. And so, you know, I lived at the park. So that's kind of where, like, I got a little bit more of my game, you know. When you saw me in a Mount Vernon High School jersey, Mount Vernon AAU, you know, I'm catching my back to the basket, dribble handoffs, pivoting, finding my shooters, cutting, screening, rolling. You know, then I go to the park, and now I got the ball in my hands, and I'm working on my crossovers, my behind the back, my attacks. I had way more freedom, and now I got to be the facilitator at the park. You know, and if back in the day, you know, like if, you know, you show up on a nice summer day, there might be 40 people there. So if you lose, you're not getting back on for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where I learned my kind of like drive to win and knack to win. Like, we got to win, otherwise we're going to be off. You know, show up there and hold it down for 4 or 5 hours and be done. So my development really, you know, it was a long process. I feel like I really developed like a lot of team aspects, team understanding, you know, triple threat positions, footwork. But as far as like my handle and what you saw, like the last couple of years of my career, like that really did take off till college. So I pretty much got to college just off athleticism and winning pedigree, really.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and, you know, I'm kind of just talking a little bit about high school. You know, I had read a little bit that your career as far as started off with a lob and a backboard shatter. Could you kind of run us through that a little bit, your sophomore year?
Man, you guys ever play NBA Street on PlayStation?
Yeah.
Greatest game ever, right? Y'all remember the game breaker where you throw it off the backboard and he catches it, shatters it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did that in a game. so, you know, again, growing up, Sean Kemp was my idol. You know, I used to spend hours, you know, with the hoop lowered, trying different dunks, and I'd raise it up 6 inches and try it again, raise it up, see where I could get to. We used to bring the boom box to the school, and, you know, we didn't have a mini hoop, but they had monkey bars. So we're doing dunk contests on the monkey bars. that was kind of like where I spent, you know, when I should have been working on left-hand layups and my form, I was working on dunks and just crazy, you know, 360 windmills and things of that nature. That all kind of like really helped build my athleticism, and, you know, me and my teammates, we just kind of had a little flair for the dramatic. And my first in-game dunk was my freshman year in high school. It was like the last game. I made C team, by the way. I don't know if you can make C team. They kept me on C team. They moved a couple of my teammates up to JV. And again, you said I could go on tangent, so I'm kind of going on tangent.
Totally.
So yeah. My first in-game dunk, last game, freshman year, just basic dunk. And then I feel like my athleticism from my freshman year to my sophomore year really took off. Like, you know, eighth grade, I could barely, you know, I was like dunking maybe 50% of the time. You know, I got my first dunk like summer after seventh grade. Freshman year, I'm starting to pack it a little bit. And I remember first day of sophomore year, I had lugs on. Y'all remember lugs?
Oh, yeah.
Big boom. So I had the lugs and the Pure Playas or Carl Kanai jeans or something. And I walk in the gym and I just take 2 steps and windmill with the lugs on at like 8 a.m. And I was like, okay, I got, you know, I was built for it at that time. All I did was jump and leap. And so fast forward, sophomore season, we're undefeated. I'm getting garbage time. We got the best team in the state and we're playing at Anacortes High School. And gosh, we're up. So JV game, I had 3 dunks in the JV game, like vicious dunks. Like I had dunks. So I dunked it so hard, ball came through the net, bounced off my head and went out, and they said, no bucket. I dunked that thing so hard. I mean, I was crushing on them in the JV game. So, you know, I get a varsity quarter and I'm like, man, I got to get my first varsity dunk. And then one of my teammates, we ended up going to Gonzaga together, and he ended up being the AAA state player of the year. So I had like 2 all-state guards on my team my senior year. But anyways, he was throwing me lobs in practice. We'd been practicing this stuff for a while, But my first varsity dunk, you know, I get a rebound, outlet up the floor, running 2-on-1 fast break. He lobs it over this kid, and I catch it with one hand, dunk it. Didn't break the backboard on that one, but that was my first varsity dunk, was an alley-oop. And then we get to about 10 seconds left in the game. We're up 48 points. Their point guard's bringing the ball up, walking it up, like, all right, let me get this over with. My teammate, he's like low in a stance, ready to strap up. It's like, yo, there's 5 seconds left in the game. What are these kids doing? So I don't know if you could picture it, but point guard's bringing the ball up the court. My teammate kind of reaches around him and taps the ball into the paint, like, we're on defense. Mm-hmm. One of my teammates catches the ball. Once we get like a loose ball, we're taking off. Like, I don't care how much time's left, we're going. So my teammate, he gets the ball from like the opposite, like the block, right? We're on defense. And he throws this full court pass from the block to the other free throw line. So my buddy who tapped the ball into the front court, he's sprinting the other way. Ball's in the air. As a ball's sailing over the head, I'm sprinting full speed. And I was fast now. Yeah. I was real fast, still fast. I get to half court and I yell, backboard. And my buddy, he catches it at the free throw line. He's looking back the other way, right? Catches it in the air, and in one turns, throws that thing off the backboard. Boom, comes right back to my hands. I'm off 1 foot. You know, I'm about 12 feet in the air. Catch that ball perfectly. Dunk. Backboard shatters. I held on the rim. The rim broke away just enough to not kill me. So I broke away just a little bit. Backboard shatters at the buzzer.
Wow.
Win by 50. Go check it on YouTube now.
Yeah,
it's pretty sweet. I've always wanted like the sports science behind that. Like, I was 170-pound sophomore. I don't know how that thing broke, but it was meant to be. It's pretty funny because my high school coach, Mac Frazier, you can see him in the video. After it happens, he walks by and just throws a towel at the bench, and the way he told it later was because the other coach was he mentored that other coach. And so he was like, you know, it's like you go to your buddy's house, you eat all his cookies, you beat him at all of his games, and you just break everything and leave. So, yeah, we won by 50. But, you know, what are you going to do when you leave a couple hungry sophomores in the game that, you know, are trying to dunk on everybody? You know, you should have took us out. It's funny. I got a bunch of the glass from some friends that ran onto the court and got some glass. I actually went up to the janitors afterwards to try and get all the glass. And they're like, get out of here. You've done enough. And I was like, what do you mean? If I could do it every time, I would. This wouldn't be the first time, you know, I'm like a 170-pound skeleton. Like, I don't know how this happened, but yeah, man, it's been all downhill from then. You know, I did that when I was 16. I'm 39 now, man. I'll never do something like that in my life. It was destiny at that point, man. That's literally a culmination of all like my dreams at that point, was to like do something like that.
That's awesome.
You're like, I am Sean Kemp. No.
I'm like, hey, Sean, you haven't done this. And by the way, like, you know, side note, humble brag, like, Sean is like, I would say Sean is like a friend of mine. Like, I've seen him a lot over the years. It started off, he was scoring a dunk contest that I was in Seattle. It's called Battle at the Lake. And it's at Green Lake. And again, back to Street 2, if you played Street 2 and you could choose your courts, Green Lake was one of the courts.
Oh, no way.
So here I'm at Green Lake. I won the Battle of the Lake dunk contest two years in a row. Sean Kemp was judging, scoring. So I'm getting the flick with Sean, having a moment to tell him how much he inspired me and how, like, man, you're my idol, bro. Like, you're my Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? And then, you know, kind of seeing him over through the years, and he ended up, he hosted two birthday parties for me. He had a restaurant in downtown Seattle. He hosted my birthday party. He showed up both times. Wow. We turned it up. We had a great time. I know his wife, and yeah, they're good people. Actually, it's crazy. One of my buddies had a 40th birthday, and he was like, man, I'm trying to, he's from Houston. We played against each other in Saudi Arabia. That's how we know each other. And he's like, man, I'm trying to find a Sean Kemp jersey for my birthday. I can't find him in Houston anywhere. And so I ended up finding, I can't remember the brand. It's a real nice jute. It's like something in Wesson. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
Mitchell and Ness,
something like that. Yeah. Way off, but you got me. Found him a Mitchell and Ness. And I called Sean. I was like, hey, man, you know, can you do me a favor? Can you sign this jersey for my buddy's 40th birthday? So this is actually this last year sometime. So I went down to Sean's cannabis shop. That's where he was at. Met him down there in Seattle, and he signed it for me. And I got to send it off to my buddy for his 40th. So he did me a little favor for his birthday. So, man, that's my idol, though. You know, that's the reason. That's really the reason why I stuck with basketball. Well, one of the reasons, you know, like he really inspired me, and he made the game fun and exciting, and that's all I ever wanted to do, was kind of bring that to the court.
Love that.
That's awesome. That's cool. Did you ever get a chance to play with Sean? I know there's a lot of pro-am stuff that goes on in Seattle that you've been a part of, but he might have been retired at that point, maybe.
Yeah, he was retired at that point.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Yep. But yeah, always cool to see him, run into him, and you know, every time I was trying to tell him, hey man, I love you, dude. Like, you inspired me. Like, you're the reason why I do what I do. You know, everything I get to do through basketball kind of started with that inspiration.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's awesome to be able to get the chance to, you know, meet your childhood idol. You know, that's something I always dreamed of doing, man. That's so cool.
I don't take it for granted, man. You know, definitely thank my lucky stars for that opportunity, and just the opportunity to see him and converse with them. And now when he sees me, he's like, what's up, Tyler? You know, he's like, man, Sean knows me, you know what I mean? I've known him for a while now. And so it's still kind of surreal, because that's Sean Kemp, man. That's the Rain Man.
Right. That's like the ultimate Seattle nickname too. The Rain Man in Seattle. Right.
Yeah.
It's the Rain. Yeah.
All right.
I didn't want to get that's too awesome. Close to him, you know, so I didn't use his Rain. I spelt it differently, but.
That's funny. Yeah, he would have come after you for trademarks or something. No, that's awesome. So you developed quite a bit by the time you got to your senior year there, and you weren't quite like the leading scorer during the season, but I guess in the playoffs you were about 19 a game and 10 rebounds. What kind of happened there? Was that just like tapping back into the, like, well, if we lose, we don't get to play anymore mindset when those playoffs came around, that undefeated senior season?
Man, so let me tell you a little bit about the buildup. So, you know, my freshman year, they moved three of my teammates up to JV, and they left me on the freshman team. And of course, being young and dumb and unaware, I was super pissed. And I was like, man, I should be on the JV. We're the Fab Four. You know, you can't leave me on the freshman team. You know, but what I didn't realize at the time is, you know, they really wanted to develop me for the long haul. And I'd always had these guys that I could rely on, you know, talking about, you know, telling y'all about my AAU experience, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. All I had to do was rebound, you know, and that's the only role I really needed to have, because all these other guys could score. Like, I had some really talented teammates, guys that were all state 2 years in a row, two guys. You know, I never got all state or anything. And so that freshman year, now I don't have those guys to rely on. And now I got to score 20 a game just for us to have a chance to win. And we ended up going 18-2 without three guys. I mean, we would have just obliterated everybody with one other of those guys, let alone all three of them.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not going to help us be better, right? And it's crazy, you know, watching some of the experiences of kids I work with now. You know, everyone wants to be varsity, everyone wants to be JV, but no one wants to have the best role. You know, it's like, go where you're going to have the biggest role. If you're going to go to JV and be the eighth person or be on the bench, you know, or you could be on freshman team playing the whole game. You know, a lot of kids, they want to be on JV just to say they're on JV. It's like, well, that freshman playing time is where you're going to get better. But, you know, again, I couldn't see that. And so I try and remind the kids about the importance of a role and court time. But that's where I finally got to bring some of that Hillcrest Park game that I'd been kind of working on behind the scenes. I got to kind of bring that out my freshman year. And Now I had to have the ball in my hands, and I had to play make, and I had to do all the other things. And, you know, I had to have my back against the wall a little bit. Now I still had really solid teammates, no doubt, but you know, I had to score the ball a lot more for us to be successful. And that really paid off, you know, 4 years later. So, you know, props to my coaches for doing that, because without that, I don't know if things would have came together my senior year the way they did. Mm-hmm. So freshman year, we go 18-2 on the freshman team. And then sophomore year, I'm swinging JV varsity. I think, you know, again, JV, we went like 18-2 again. and then I swung on varsity. We went 26-1. The only loss we had was the second round of the state tournament. We lost to Mercer Island, which in the 90s was kind of like Mount Vernon, just powerhouse. Coached by legendary Ed Pepple. They had a squad of like five guys that went D1. And they kind of smacked us a little bit. And that was our only loss of the year. So we lose that second round game. And then we won the fourth place game. We actually beat Jamal Crawford in Rainier Beach. That was Jamal's fifth year. Jamal was unbelievable. Oh my goodness. Jamal in high school.
I can only
Jamal right now today. I actually played Jamal a few weeks ago. Jamal's mm-hmm. unbelievable. So that was my sophomore year. Junior year, I'm starting now. We go 24-3. Our three losses, the first one, we lose at Seahome, Bellingham School. We lose at Seahome in overtime on a buzzer beater. So we lose by one. Second loss, we play Garfield, who has, you know, Seattle powerhouse. They had Brandon Roy. Y'all heard of Brandon Roy? They had Brandon Roy and his older brother, Ed. This dude, Ed, was bananas. Who else they have? Will Conroy. Played at UW. He's a current UW assistant. Who else am I missing? I mean, Jamal Miller, Isaiah Stanback, quarterback. Anyways, I could go through the whole roster. Like, they had a stacked roster. Roydell Smiley played at USC. But we lose to them at Key Arena, right, where the Sonics were playing. We lose to them in overtime on a buzzer beater. So, and then go state championship my junior year. We lose by two. So we lose three games by 4 points my junior year. Lose the state championship game. So going into senior year, it's like, man, you know, sophomore year, we go 26-1. Had a team to win it, didn't pull it off. Junior year, we go 24-3. You know, three losses by 4 points. Lose the state championship. That whole summer going into the senior year, it was just like a revenge tour. It was like, yo, we're seniors now. It's time to go. We got to take care of biz. I can't remember where I was supposed to get to, but we rolled through everybody my senior year, went undefeated and won the state championship. Now I remember what you're talking about. Once I got to the varsity level my junior year, I'm kind of back to, you know, freshman, sophomore year, I'm having a little more freedom on the freshman team, JV. I'm kind of handling the ball, scoring, getting buckets. As a junior, I'm kind of back to playing my game, rebounding, playing D, moving the ball, not really having to score a whole lot. And that kind of continued my senior year. And I was very passive. I'm kind of one of those guys where if you keep shooting, I'm probably not going to like join you in being a ball hog. I'm probably going to keep moving the ball and trying to like, I don't want to fall into that. Right. And I had guys that, you know, again, I had two all-state guards my senior year. And so they were putting them up. I did a lot of rebounding, a lot of defense and a lot of passing. As around districts, my senior year, where something just kind of clicked. It was kind of like that Hillcrest moment where it was like, yo, we gotta win or we're off the court, right? And now it's off the court for good. It's high school is over with, so it's time to go. I think from that first district game, I don't know if I scored less than 15 the rest of the way. State tournament, you know, I go from averaging, I was like fifth leading scorer. Really, I was just chilling all season long, just getting dunks, waiting for a time to go. I was like fifth leading scorer, and then state tournament, I was the leading scorer, almost 20, almost 20 and 10. I think I led the team in assists and blocks. I think I shot 71% in the state tournament.
Wow.
Over those four games, 4 days. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if y'all listened to, or I don't know if y'all watched Above the Rim. You know, have y'all watched Above the Rim? Yeah. You know, a little montage when he's working out and he's listening to that Snoop Dogg, pump, pump. You know what I'm talking about? I was listening to that, like showing up to the stadium, to Tacoma Dome every day. I was ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote Red Rum on my shoes. I was like, it's kind of harder. You know, that's what I was about in high school. So the way that we won was, it was crazy, man. It was destiny. Like the four teams we beat were the previous four state champions. So we beat O'Day. We beat O'Day in round one, which they had won it in like 98. And then we beat round two, we beat Mercer Island, who beat us my sophomore year. You know, I told y'all we were 26-1. We lost to Mercer Island. They went on to win it. And then the third round would be Seattle Prep, who beat us the year before in the state championship. And they had like two guys that are going Pac-10 at the time. And then for the state championship, we beat Rainier Beach, who had beat us, I think it was 97, my freshman year. We had a good friend miss a couple free throws that would ice the game. He missed them, and Rainier Beach won. And then they kind of had a really easy win in the state championship. So we had like a really good run of like 4, 5, 6 years where Mount Vernon had the team to win it. We just didn't pull it off. Mm-hmm. And then our senior year comes around and we go undefeated. We only had one win less than 10 points. And then those 4 days we beat the previous four state championships. And I got state tournament MVP, national player of the week. It was a really good week for me. But it was just go time, you know what I mean? I had a dunk in the, I think it was, yes, fourth quarter of the game. I had a dunk down the lane, and you know, that kind of capped it off a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh yeah, no, sorry. And then I was just wondering, you know, kind of on that run, and you mentioned O'Day, Mercer Island, Seattle Prep, and Rainier Beach. Were there any like some elite players that you could mention that you had some good battles with?
Man, so Rainier Beach had the twins, mm-hmm. Logic and Roderick Stewart. They were really, you know, they were highly touted, highly rated. They both ended up going to USC. One of them transferred to Kansas. Seattle Prep had two guys. One went to UW, Jeff Day, 6'10". One went to Cal, 6'9", Eric Bond. And we had played them. You know, they beat us the year before in the state championship. Mercer Island just had, like, they had a guy who went and played football at Stanford. He actually tackled me at the end of that game. So I'm telling you, the rivalry was so fierce. Mercer Island was such a fierce rivalry. End of the game, we're going to win. I get the ball at half court, and I'm about to, you know, uncork something vicious for him. And their guy, like, pretty much undercuts me while I'm in the air. Like, I'm going up for a dunk. He undercuts me. And they call a foul. They kick him out of the game. He actually gets suspended for his last high school game. Wow. Which, I mean, I do feel bad for the guy because, I mean, he let his motions get the best of him. But he could have really hurt me. But that's how fierce the rivalry was. Like, he was like, he did not want me to dunk that. I don't blame him either. It was going to bring the house down. But, you know, my junior year, we had that battle. With Garfield, and Brandon Roy was a sophomore.
Yep.
I missed this dunk. Man, I wish I could show you guys the video. I got the ball in the wing, jab, two dribbles down the lane. Brandon Roy gets caught underneath the hoop, and my dunk goes off the back of the rim.
Oh.
I mean, man, I have a picture of me like over B Roy. And I'm like, man, if I would have made that and swung on B Roy, but I missed it. It goes back to half court. But Brandon, he wasn't B Roy at that time. You know, he's still a young cat. But that was a good battle. Man, there was what this is like right, you know, right around when Washington was really starting to crack, you know, like I think Washington's getting a lot of love now.
Yeah.
We didn't get that love back then, but we had the players. I think we even had more talent than there is now. And I think like the level of the talent, you know, like the Paulos and guys, like the level of the talent's so crazy, but like the amount of talent that Washington had. Like for instance, my team, nobody, UW, Wazoo didn't recruit anybody from my team. You know, we're undefeated state champs. You can't find, there's not one of us on the team you guys want.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot, man. There's a lot going on. A lot of great players. Yeah.
That's wild. Was Mark Few showing up to games at that point, or how did Gonzaga kind of get on your radar? Were you always a Zag fan or?
So we went to Gonzaga team camp my junior and senior year, so you know, that summer before, and I won the dunk contest both years. You know, put on a little show there, and then the summer going into our senior year, you know, that was the revenge tour. You know, we went out there and really balled out. We played Ferris in the championship game, which Ferris is a 4A school from Spokane. They had a really highly touted kid named Sean Mallon, who ended up going to Gonzaga. But we beat them in the championship game. And my buddy who went to Gonzaga with me, he was AAA state player of the year. He had like 37, 39 in the game. And I think I had 30, like we just balled out. So they had a really good front row view to see who we were. They offered my buddy Josh, he was just super polished, most athletic, 6'6" guard you ever saw. Quickest hands, quickest feet, super bounce. It annoyed me. I took this guy to a dunk contest in Canada. Now, I love the guy, it's my brother, but I took him to a dunk contest. I get invited to this dunk contest in Canada, and I wish I had the roster of the guys who were there, because they had some of the best players in Canada. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. There's a Canadian kid who went to UConn like back in the day. I said his name, y'all might remember, but he was there. But anyways, I go there to do the dunk contest. I'm like, I'll bring my buddy Josh. He's got bounce. And he does the same three dunks I do. So I'm doing my dunks, yeah, getting scored for it. He goes and does the same three. And of course, I'm 6'6", he's 6'1", you know, and he's doing like, you know, he's doing his little showmanship. For me, my dunk was the show. He would do like his little swag stuff after the dunk. And I'm like, no, and he's got the light skin vibes going. I'm just like, you know, and he wins the dunk contest, and they give him the Jordan shorts and the Jordan bag, and I'm like, bro, you gotta kick me back something here. I brought you here. You wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for me. You know what I mean? My light just went out, but yeah. So I don't even know what I was talking about. Where was I going with that?
Eventually, like Gonzaga, I know you ended up going with Josh to Gonzaga, but how did, like, I guess, was Few offering you after those camps, or how did that kind of work out?
Thanks for getting me back on track.
No worries.
The light didn't just go out of my house, it went out in my head too. So they had been kind of following me and, you know, seeing how I was going to develop. And so kind of going into the state tournament. Little backstory, I played football. Football is kind of my first love. So when I wasn't playing basketball when I was a kid, I was playing football. And I played all the way up to my like freshman year in high school. Freshman year, I didn't have a great experience. And I was like, forget football, I'm just going to focus on basketball. Senior year comes around. So I didn't play sophomore, junior year. Senior year comes around. It's like last chance. Couple other basketball guys were like, let's go play. So we go play football. That fall, and we had like one of the best, like the best team in like 15 years for the school. And I played wide receiver. I like to think, you know, I was kind of the light skinned Randy Moss, you know what I mean? But we ran the football quite a bit. But I got some offers to play football. I was actually going to go play both at Western. I had an offer to play football and basketball at Western Washington, which at the time they were like, they're a D2 powerhouse in both. Again, I'm kind of a late bloomer athletically. I think, you know, I hang with anybody, but as far as skill development on the court, I was a cog in the system, and I just didn't really understand what it took to take my game to the next level quite yet. I had the athleticism. So going into the state tournament, I didn't really have any offers. I was going to play football and basketball. And then after the state tournament, you know, MVP performance, few was in the crowd watching. That's when, you know, things kind of picked up with them afterwards. You know, when they came and asked me to come there, it was a no brainer, you know, no brainer at the time. So, that was an incredible opportunity too. And that's kind of like when my game really, really started to take shape, was those 2 years at Gonzaga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't do a lot of losing over there either.
No. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So you ended up redshirting your freshman year there, right?
Oh yeah. Needed the redshirt year. You know, I'm showing up to campus. I'm a skeleton. You know, I'm like 180 pounds, 185 pounds, 6'6". My redshirt coach, Tommy Lloyd. Y'all heard that name?
Tommy Lloyd. I've not heard Tommy Lloyd.
So you'll hear about him. He is the current head coach at University of Arizona.
Okay.
All right.
So he's turning things around already over there.
Yeah.
But man, Tommy is really he's like, to me, you know, I only had 2 years there. So, you know, take that for what it is. But my feeling is like Tommy's like was a major, major backbone to what Gonzaga has done, you know, this whole run the last 20 years. You know, any guys from overseas that are on that squad, Tommy recruited, you know, guys that come in and really transform their bodies and their game in that redshirt year. Of course, it's the whole staff, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But you know, Tommy was incredible. Tommy changed my life. I showed up to Gonzaga as a five man, a four man, and he turned me into a 1-2-3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got me going from here to here. You know, he totally changed my shot. You know, a lot of the things that he worked on with me and put me through, and the ways he transformed me. That's kind of the approach I take to my training. Like he really inspired what I'm doing. I mean, there's a lot of people that inspired me, but as far as like hands-on skill training, man, I had Tommy every day for 2 years. And, you know, one of my downfalls is I was, you know, late bloomer maturity wise too. So, you know, I was kind of a knucklehead when I was at Gonzaga, didn't have all my priorities straight. Didn't see the big picture at the time. You know, I wish I would have had, if I could go back, I don't have a lot of regrets, you know, you live and you learn. But sometimes I think if I would have had 5 years of development with Tommy Lloyd, you know, maybe I would have been talking about the NBA after those 5 years, instead of overseas. But I owe a lot to that guy. He really, changed my game. I mean, I was like a wild horse when I showed up, you know, as much of a team player and all that I was individually, like I had no idea how to move my feet on defense. You know, we played a lot of 2-3 matchup zone in high school. I'm catching the ball on the elbow back to the basket. And now, you know, I'm working on facing up triple threat jabs, guarding my redshirt year at, you know, Dan Dickow's senior year. I don't know if y'all remember him.
Yep.
But man, I had a front row to watching Dan Dickow senior season, All American, unbelievable. But, you know, the first time I had to guard him on the perimeter, you know, his first jab, my feet are just switching, you know, like I had no idea how to stay sound as a defender. Those 2 years at Gonzaga were really transformative for me in a lot of ways.
Definitely. And just like, cause I went to play basketball up at the University of Calgary. I was there for about a season and a half. And that experience for me, as far as development went, was the best part and what I learned to this day and still do. Would you say you guys being so close to Canada, you know, and their style of play is more about development and, you know, seeing the whole athlete through, would you say that was kind of similar to, you know, how you guys played being so close to the border?
Like just as far as
Was development more of your guys' focus coming through high school? Cause like you said, you played on that freshman team and they wanted to focus on your development. Would you say that, you know, that's more of the style there than, you know, some of the other places?
Man, I really can't speak on that because I don't have those experiences in other places. I feel like, you know, the way that we dominated and the way that we developed, I think what we were doing at our high school and the coaches I had, it was a unique situation. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, you also can't coach talent, right? You can't coach somebody to be, you know, 6'6" and go and break them backboards, or excuse me, my teammate Troy, who, you know, he had a 500 make a day workout, you know, like some of those things you can't teach, right? You know, bless their hearts, some of the kids that, you know, some of the programs in the area lately, you know, the talent just isn't quite there. You know, if you walk into a Mount Vernon gym in 2000, you know, or 1999, you walk in there and see 8-9 guys 6'6" or taller. You know, I mean, that just, it was a great combination of having a lot of talent and then coaches that really actually really cared. Yeah. And they were there for the long haul. I think there's a lot of turnover in high school sports right now where, you know, kids aren't getting playing time. They leave or they quit. You know, coaches are looking for the next best job. And if they're, you know, people leave a lot more now. And so I think it's tougher to build the type of program that we had going. So if you're able to keep coaches for years in a row, and you're able to keep kids in the program, and also kind of even going back before they get into the program, like having that AAU program where we really, for 3 years before high school, we ran all the high school's plays. We ran their defense. We knew everything about what we were about to do. And so when we showed up, we already had all the sets and all the movements. I don't know if that answers your question.
That's solid.
No, I do think the development piece is you know, grossly overlooked, and and the satisfaction for right now is you know, people are looking at that more. They want to have, you know, if you're not good right now, well, we got to find who's good right now instead of having that big picture. And I'm really thankful for those coaches that had my long-term development, because they could have put me on JV, and you know, I would have probably rotted at the end of the bench, and I would never had that. Got that confidence to like, hey, I could step on the court and score 20 right now. We can win. You know, and maybe the senior year comes around, you know, and a couple of my guys, you know, we needed a pickup my senior year. It's kind of why I started scoring, is, you know, we kind of needed it. And if I wouldn't have that development and that confidence to do it, you know, I don't know, maybe it doesn't happen, but yeah. And that's why I love what I get to do every day, is I get to take kids from where they're at, and I'm always just trying to take it from here to here. You know, you get you here, I'm gonna try and get you to here. So it's just that long-term development and growth that's I think, again, largely overlooked.
Yes. Yeah, no, because here in Florida, that's, you know, the feeder focus is not there. And I was trying to, you know, explain to them why that is so important to start early in between sixth and eighth grade, so you can kind of hit the ground running. So that's a phenomenal point. And I'm glad to see that, you know, your focus is on the development of the full player.
Oh, man, 100%. You know, and I think it's got to come from a place, you know, an organic place, where it's just like trying to look at the whole player, and it's mentally, physically, you know, even spiritually, like, you know, how can we get you to get, you know, eliminate limiting beliefs. You know, I hear kids say can't a lot, and I'm like, it's not that you can't, you just have enough practice, you know, give yourself some time. You know, I'm always making kids use their offhand, and, you know, I got my fifth grade squad now. I wish I could show y'all some clips of my fifth graders, but these little dudes are ballers. And, you know, I got them, you know, I don't got them. They've been doing the work, but they got them, you know, they're making left-handed lanes in the games and throwing, you know, full court passes off one hand off the dribble dimes, and, you know, they're hitting threes, holding their follow through and their offhand. And, you know, it's cool to see, because some days you feel like you're racking your brain trying to get them to understand certain things, and it's like, gosh, am I really helping them? If I, you know, and then you see things happen in the game, and you're like, okay, this is why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And you know, this time of the year, you know, obviously, if you're a competitor, you're playing on a team, you're practicing. Especially middle school kids, high school kids are really busy, and so I'm like, as a trainer, I'm like, okay, a lot of these kids, they don't need me right now. They're playing. Who needs work? And now it's the younger little kids. So I'm looking at, you know, getting some of those adapter hoops that go over the rims, you know, to make the hoop 8 foot. And so I'm really looking into starting like a bitty league, like a, you know, a K through two league, and just do like mini courts, 8-foot hoops, mini balls, and do like 3-on-3 work, and just get kids understanding, introducing kids to passing and cutting and moving and spacing. And, you know, 3-on-3, you get a lot of reps. You know, you get that mini ball and a shorter hoop, and now they can actually, you know, we could actually work on form. And so just trying to plant that seed and give kids an outlet, an early outlet to get developed and, you know, bring them through and bring them up.
Do you know, coach/Dr. Brian McCormick at all?
Where's that? Sounds kind of familiar.
He's written a bunch of basketball books, and he coaches overseas in Estonia. We actually had him on a few weeks ago, and he does exactly what you're describing. He runs a league or a program that like other teams or other there's like chapters all over the country where you can, you know, kind of take on his playmakers league, and it's 3-on-3. It's really young age. It's different size balls, different size hoops for, you know, the size appropriate kind of for the kids and developmental, and same concept, 3-on-3, more touches, more development. So we should definitely send you his contact. He'll be able to help you out with that for sure. And that off the ground. Hell yeah. No, he was a smart guy. He's written like 20 basketball books. I don't know how that was possible, but he's a philosopher for sure.
Side note, one of my coaches at Gonzaga, he's the most published basketball author ever, Jerry Krause.
Oh damn, that's wild.
Yeah.
What's the record?
I don't know. Maybe it's changed. Maybe McCormick's got him by now. But when I was at Gonzaga, Krause was the most published basketball author ever. He friends with John Wooden. Look him up. He's a legend. That's awesome. I've been really lucky with coaches, man. I've had awesome coaches. So
that's great.
I'm like, look, this isn't my opinion. I've learned from the best. You know, I'm not telling you to listen to me. I got Hall of Fame coaches, and you know, those are the lessons I'm passing on.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you were there for like the infancy of that Gonzaga run, like pretty much the very beginning of it. You mentioned Tommy Lloyd bringing in and, you know, having a huge impact on bringing in overseas guys and developing people and stuff, which obviously Gonzaga seems every year to be led by some random guy from somewhere random in the world dropping 30 a game. But when you were there, they had Roni Turioff. When you got into the gym for the first time and into practice, were you like, oh yeah, no, Tommy's right, I'm a guard now? Because you get a matchup with Roni? Or
I did. I had to guard Roni a lot in the post when we first got there. Me and Roni got to campus the same day. And you know, Roni, he's from an island country, Martinique. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd have to check with Ro. I love Ro. He's a good dude, but we kind of bumped heads a little bit because I was very, very sarcastic. And, you know, Roni, Roni's French. He didn't really understand the sarcasm for a little bit. So I'm teasing him, and he's thinking that I don't like him. But really, that's just how I showed I liked you. I'm going to tease you a little bit. But, you know, Roni was super raw as an athlete, as a player. I mean, you know, he was 6'9". He had the hair flowing back. I actually used to block his shot all the time in the post because he'd always turn into me and show the ball. So when he first got to campus, you know, I'd stay behind him. You know, I was always used to guarding a bigger player in the post, and I'd be able to block his shot. But you know, obviously he developed in a major way, and I did dunk on him one time. Ro, if you ever see this, I dunked on Roni Turioff so bad in practice, I knocked him into the back wall. I tried to bring it up to him years later, and he's like, what? No. Roni, you don't sound like that either, by the way. But I love Roni. Really cool to see. I mean, he's kind of like the epitome of what Gonzaga can do for a player. He showed up, and did he have the tools, the talent? For sure. But, you know, the way that they molded him and built him, and of course, he put in the work and bought into it, right? But yeah, what an awesome story he was. I was very thankful to have, you know, played those 2 years with them. And man, if I didn't have all these other great memories to look back on, and you know, I suppose my career could have died after I transferred. But you know, having other things to look back on, be proud of, it definitely makes it easier to not feel like I regret leaving, you know, even though I do think about the what ifs, but, you know, turned around and made something out of it after I left. But yeah, Gonzaga, holy cow. And it wasn't, you know, obviously not just Tommy and not just Mark. I mean, all the coaches that they get there are just high level basketball teachers and thinkers. Two guys that got on staff right now I actually played with. So one of the assistant coaches, Brian Michelson, I played with him. We didn't redshirt together, but, or did we? We played a lot together on scout team. Mm-hmm. He's there right now. And then Stephen Gentry, he's a coach. He was walk on at Gonzaga. Like the epitome of like just a kid who just shows up and just gets everything, you know, everything he got, he had to earn. And certainly him being on staff is a testament to that. But I nicknamed him Shaggy because he literally looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. So I was super pumped one day. Like someone sends me this article about Stephen Gentry getting hired as Gonzaga coach. And in the article, you know, it's like Zag Nation calls him Shaggy. And he gave me props. He's like, yeah, Tyler May had nicknamed me Shaggy. So I'm like, I stick somewhere in Gonzaga folklore.
Let's go.
That's amazing. Speaking of Shaggy, another kind of Shaggy lookalike showed up the year that you left, Adam Morrison. Did he ever show up his senior year before you left and do some run with you guys?
Oh, yeah. 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 He went to high school in Spokane. So
yep.
He'd come to campus all the time. And actually the year after my redshirt year, he showed up quite a bit, excuse me. And we played a lot of one-on-one. Me and that dude actually spent a lot of time hooping together. And that guy, man, I can't ever remember a dude having a shot as high as him. I mean, yeah. I could jump now. And every now and then I would time it perfectly. I'd time it perfectly to block that jumper and I could never touch it. It was that high. And the dude just competed. I mean, he just competed and competed. And like, love you, Adam, but I look at him and be like, how's this dude give me buckets? Like, man.
Yeah, man.
All skinnier than me, just goofy stash. I'm like, man, but the dude was just unbelievable competitor. And of course, when I was watching him and JJ Redick battle for player of the year and battle for, you know, I think they're both at 28, 29 points a game. I was like, okay, this guy wasn't just giving me buckets. He's giving everyone.
Yes.
So that was really cool to watch too. But yeah, what a college player he was. I mean, you know, he was just a player in general for sure. You know, what an incredible talent.
Most definitely. Yeah. You know, yeah. You talked a little bit about what sparked the transfer.
Man. So, I think it was kind of a combination of things. I think number one, just not having the big picture in mind. After that redshirt year, I felt like I was, we all feel like this, but I feel like I was good enough to start or good enough to get a lot of minutes. And I just didn't have the big picture in mind, y'all. I wasn't ready to put in the work and grind. I wanted that playing time right away. I wasn't really aware of my thoughts. I wasn't aware of myself. And so a lot of the thoughts that I was letting come in and make space in my head, it was making a home, like negative thoughts, like, oh, I should be playing, you know, whatever it was, whatever narrative I had going, it was negative. And I let it live there and I let it fester. And it kind of took my focus away from what I really needed to do, which was to grind and practice every day and prove to them that I deserved the playing time. And then, you know, in addition to that, there was, you know, you got Adam Morrison coming in. They had a transfer from UW coming in and a lot of guys coming in at my position. And I just kind of created this narrative in my head that I wasn't one of their guys. And so I did a lot of disservice to myself. And, you know, at the time, you know, early in Few's career, you know, I don't know if he was quite as personable as he is now. And I was going through some things in my personal life. My folks had gotten divorced and I was struggling with some things. And I used to, you know, I had my high school coach was like a father figure to me. My AAU coach I was really close with. And at the time I just, you know, me and Coach Few weren't that close. And I just didn't really feel like he cared about me. And it was a lot, it was really, I take responsibility for all that. But I probably needed just like someone to put their arm around me and to say, hey, you know, you're effing up right now. This is what I need you to do. You know, we want you here, you know, something to that nature. But I think I took myself out of that a lot. So I take 100% of the blame. But I felt like I kind of had a cloud following me. You know what I mean? I'm getting real right now. I'm getting a little deep. But no, I had a little bit of a self-made cloud. You know what I mean? Just the decisions and the thoughts that I was letting live and the way that I was living and thinking just wasn't the best me. And so, I transferred and I went to JUCO, Dixie State, you know, thinking I was going to go there and go back to D1, you know, again, and just not having that big picture in mind. You know, and, you know, going to JUCO, man, it was like, after that year in JUCO, I was like, man, I want to go home. JUCO was crazy, like 3.5 hour practices. I got criminals on my team. <I'm> like, man, what did I do? it's all, you know, we all got to learn in different ways. And, I had to learn the hard way. Y'all can ask me any more, anything else you want about that situation. But yeah, it really just boils down to being immature and really immature. And, you know, I probably didn't let in some people that were willing to guide me. I probably had them shut out. My folks didn't go to college, play sports. They couldn't really give me any advice on what to do or how to handle that. I was kind of on my own with that. They always supported whatever I thought or whatever I wanted to do, which was great in a lot of situations. And maybe in this one, I could have used more guidance, but I didn't know how to ask for it. I didn't know who to go to, especially when, you know, my mind, my thoughts, my actions, they weren't right at the time. They weren't really conducive to being, a top level student athlete at Gonzaga. So I wasn't holding up my end of the bargain. I just thought, hey, I'm dunking on people. I'm shooting threes now. You know, I think one practice, redshirt year, I hit 9 threes in a row in practice. And, you know, we're ranked number 5 at the time. And I'm like, that's got to get me some PT next year, right? You know, it was all the other stuff, the in-between stuff. You know, I had the game. I had the athleticism. I could make the plays. But, you know, I wasn't holding up my end of the bargain as a student athlete. So I feel like, you know, learning those lessons and making those mistakes have definitely inspired me, motivated me as I've kind of become more aware of myself and the things that hold me back, have definitely served me well and helping mentor the youth in the area. Because it's not just about, you know, it's bigger than ball. You know, basketball to me is a microcosm of life. And the lessons we learn on the court can definitely lead to lessons off the court. And, you know, we're all going to put the ball down one day. And so, you know, I love using the game as a vessel to connect and to, you know, help kids be aware of themselves and just, you know, try to grow, you know what I mean? Wherever you're at, grow from there.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, valuable lessons for down the line and for help mentor, like you said. You know, it's like when someone's mentoring from a picture perfect background and picture perfect career trajectory, like you know, someone trying to learn from a Michael Jordan, it's probably a little harder because no one can actually be that. So you know, your little pitfalls here and there, you can help people avoid them along their journeys. But you had your old running mate Josh also transferred, and then Dustin Villapique,
right? Yep. Yeah, we were kind of like the recruiting class and we all transferred. My guy Josh, he should have stayed. I think he was next in line as the point guard there. And, you know, but that's another story for him to tell. Love my guy, Josh, one of the most talented players ever. My goodness. And then Dustin Villepeg, yeah, we transferred together. We went to Dixie State, and we won a league championship down there. It was a rough year. I was glad I had him, though. We were roommates. He's a really good dude. And, yeah, it was interesting going through that process with him. And yeah, I tell you all kinds of stories about some of the JUCO stuff that we saw. But, yeah, it was he actually went to UNLV after that, which is really cool. For me, you know, I averaged more points and more rebounds, more assists and more blocks than you, Dustin, but I didn't have those D1 looks. I was like, man, just because you're 6'9". No, I'm just kidding. He was a beast. He was guarding Andrew Bogut after that. I did have a couple D1 offers. I had University of Jacksonville and UC Irvine. I was going to have back-to-back trips to go visit both places. And I was like, you know, I was like, man, I'm going to go West Coast Beach to the East Coast Beach. This is going to be perfect. But that's all I realized. That's all I cared about, was just going to visit the beach. And I was like, you know, the JUCO year was tough because it was actually great for me. It was life-changing for me because those 2 years at Gonzaga, I feel like I got roped into a bad loop of thinking and acting. Now I was doing all the work basketball wise. I was lifting and doing skills. Like I had that going, but the mental side of the game, what I was doing off the court, wasn't in line with that. And so I get to Dixie State, which is down in St. George, Utah. Yeah, I just turned 21 and I was like, you know, I'm like, man, where are we going to go kick it at? They had 90,000 people in St. George. They have one bar called The One. Nobody goes to it, right? Like it's a Mormon community. So, and I didn't have my car. So, you know, initially I was like, oh, I'm going to be driving to Vegas all the time. It's 2 hours away. I didn't have my car. So that wasn't happening. So basically I'm kind of stuck in the desert with my thoughts. And it was the best thing for me because now life's slowing down a little bit. I didn't have the trouble to get into that I had in Spokane. And so I kind of just was left alone with my thoughts. And I had my buddy DZ, who was a really great influence, super focused student and just a good dude. But it was there where I really like life slowed down. And I got to really think about how did I get here? How did my path lead me to here right now? And it was like a time of self-reflection and awareness and growth. And also a time of like, what the hell is going on here? Like my coach running 3.5 hour practices, cussing up a storm. I mean, he was a 5'5" devil on the court. Yeah. Sorry, Coach Kidder, you were off the court, Southern gentleman. Oh, hey, Tyler, how you doing, man? Hey, you need more groceries? On the court, you know what I mean? It was crazy. I was like, man, I just want to enjoy the game. Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go to Jacksonville for 2 years? Cool, I'm in Florida for 2 years. I don't really love Florida. No offense. But I was like, I'm not trying to like live there afterwards. Same thing with Irvine. I was just, you know, I'm a homebody. My grand folks live just outside of Bellingham, you know, my family, my friends. And I was like, let me go back and enjoy these last 2 years after, you know, what I kind of put myself through these first three, let me go back and enjoy myself. Mm-hmm. But awesome. Guys, I gotta plug my computer in real quick. You guys give me 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You good? No worries.
Yeah.